You are listening to Sustainable Sounds.
Sustainable Sounds is the podcast from the Fife branch of the Scottish Green Party. Teo McLeod talks to those who are making a difference. Check out the Scottish Greens website at greens.scot.
This is Esme Houston of the Aberdeen and Aberdeenshire Greens for the Sustainable Sounds podcast.
Hello and welcome back to Sustainable Sounds, the brilliant first series of the podcast produced by the Fife branch of the Scottish Green Party. I'm Teo McLeod and I'm sat via a Zoom link with Esme Houston of the Aberdeenshire branch of the Scottish Green Party. Hey Esme, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm all right. How are you?
Very well, very well. I had a little nap earlier, so I'm now full of beans. It was lovely.
Nice. I wish I had a nap earlier.
Esme, you are from the Granite City, Scotland's third city up north. Now, I've got family from Ballater and Bancree, and I'm not sure if I've ever seen the sun up where you are.
Same.
Can you tell us a bit about yourself, please?
So, my name is Esme Houston. I am actually originally from a small town in South Lanarkshire called Lesmahago. I moved to Aberdeen around 2 years ago for university. I study politics and international relations at the University of Aberdeen, in which I am currently a third year. I do a bunch of stuff with various LGBT communities on the side. I do Esperanto stuff mostly online. I'm also quite heavily involved in the local branch of the Green Party. I'm currently the candidate for Torry Ferry Hill in the upcoming local elections. It's a very interesting time, certainly, to be involved in these kinds of politics.
Right, you mentioned a word some people might not be familiar with, Esperanto. What is this?
So Esperanto is a constructed language. It was made in 1886 by a Polish eye doctor called L.L. Zamenhof under the pseudonym Doctorio Esperanto. It's an international language. It's intended that everybody in the world would learn it as a second language so that people don't need to learn like hundreds of languages in order to be able to like, go overseas and speak to people in the modern age, speak to people over the internet who English isn't their first language. It's a better option for international communication than more, you know, Eurocentric languages like English or French or German.
Would this have non-imperialistic connotations?
I would say so. I mean, Esperanto as a language itself, because it was obviously made in Europe by a bunch of Europeans, is obviously quite Eurocentric in its own design. It doesn't take great influence from languages outside of Europe. But Esperanto as like a linguistic ideology, certainly, the idea of Esperantism is very against the idea of imperialism and nationalism and concepts like that.
Can you tell us a bit more about your role within the Green Party?
I'm currently a candidate with the Green Party for Torry Ferry Hill. And I've been doing a bunch of activism within Torry Ferry Hill, within Torry specifically, especially since I moved to the city. I've been getting involved in green stuff in and around Aberdeen ever since I joined the party. I made a good few friends through the party, gotten, you know, to get involved in a bunch of good activism, being able to go to, you know, being informed about protests. It's quite often it's quite difficult to find out about protests when you're not on things like Facebook and you don't, you know, find the right stickers on the right lampposts or things like that.
I think a lot of the time the social interactions are how those levels of awareness grow. You know,
certainly. It's being integrated into this kind of community is very important first of all, gaining a deeper understanding of the local politics in general, but also gaining a deeper understanding of the people, learning these stories, being involved, having things to do in general. It requires being a part of an interconnected community where people know each other, know you and know each other. It's one of the better things about living in a place like Aberdeen, where although it is a city, it's a smaller city, so you have that kind of vibe of, you know, people within the same communities tend to know each other for the most part.
Can you tell us a bit about the ward that you're standing in, please? Where you're from and so on?
So Torrey Ferry Hill is, well, it's a combination of the two areas of Torrey and Ferry Hill. Torrey is a, you know, fairly not suburban, but like not city centre-ish area, south of the River Don. And Ferry Hill is somewhat more built up area, much closer to the city centre. It's where things like the train station are. They're both very interesting communities to be involved in, I will say. I got to know a lot of good people running around Torrey doing my activism stuff. They have, you know, natural features like St. Fittick's Park, which is, there's actually a big campaign in Aberdeen at the moment because the council is trying to tarmac over St. Fittick's Park. So we've been, you know, out and about trying to make sure that doesn't happen. They're trying to build blue hydrogen plants where we currently have like natural greenlands, wetlands, where, you know, animals are able to move around. We also have Dooney's Farm, which has been owned for a couple of generations by some farmers. It's a petting zoo you can go and visit. They're also planning to shut that down, buy it out and tarmac it over to build these power energy production areas. It's a horrible situation. That's why we're trying to, you know, stand in the way of it.
So I suppose the follow-up question to that is, why should people in your ward vote green? Vote for you.
It's very important that we see some green voices in council because, well, Aberdeen City has never had Greens in council before. It would be nice if we had the first Greens in council. We have, I mean, there's a number of things where the current administration isn't really taking into priority. Issues like, you know, environmental issues like St. Fittick's Park, but also the recent council decision to abandon the plan to pedestrianise Union Street in Aberdeen City Centre. These are the kinds of things that you really need green voices in council to be able to stand in opposition to have a party in council that can actually listen to the people who are, you know, who are trying to come out with these concerns, and we can try and address these concerns from within the council.
You can join the Scottish Greens at greens.scot/join.
May I ask how old you are?
I am 20 years old. I turn 21 next month. I was born in 2001, which makes me the same age as the movie Shrek.
Don't tell me this. I'm 36 this year. I feel really, really old. And so I saw Shrek as a teenager. Right, so you are, I believe that you are now the youngest person to be interviewed for this podcast series. Take that, Cameron Glasgow from West Lothian Greens. But no, it's fantastic that young people are getting involved in politics. I hope that doesn't sound patronising, but it's, I was in my mid-30s before I joined a political party. You see what I mean? I think most people are probably more likely to join a charity organisation or a social group than they are a political party these days. It's not a usual thing.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I think it is very important that young people get involved in party politics. It is, I would say the two aren't mutually exclusive. You can be involved in party politics and also get involved in direct activism. Quite often you get involved in direct activism through party politics as well. But it's very important that young people get involved in these things because there is a perspective from young people, especially people around my age and in my generation, where we are, you know, addressing these concerns for the first time, that we are going to be the first generation that's going to grow up in this new world of climate hell and, you know, go through all these things, as well as being quite strongly affected by a lot of the issues within cities as well that affect young people quite badly. Like, there's a lack of social spaces in city centres these days that aren't, like, commercial in nature. There's not many spaces where you could just go and hang out with people but not be expected to pay money, which is like a terrible thing for a group of people who are on average likely to be less well off than the prior generation as well.
Well said, I think. You are involved in another community as well, I believe.
Yeah, I like to be involved in local queer stuff. I don't think I'm formally involved in any real organisation, but I enjoy like running around and trying to network these people together. I find it very important for cities like Aberdeen to have this LGBT community, this kind of queer space that people can come up and feel part of. Because a lot of the time, and this is a lot of how homophobia worked back in the day, was they would try and isolate queer people. A lot of queer people have written, queer people who were around in like the 60s and 70s, back when it was still legal to be queer, that they felt that they were one of the only queer people in the area, that even in an area with hundreds and hundreds of, you know, LGBT individuals, they can feel like there's only like two or three. So having that established LGBT community in place where you can feel like you really are part of a large and, you know, thriving community is incredibly important, both for establishing a personal identity and for and the battle against homophobia and transphobia.
We'll talk more about building a community in the next section.
Sure.
Let's just learn a bit more about yourself first. So you're involved in party politics. You are helping to build a queer community as well in your local area. And what are your hobbies and interests? Are you studying at the moment? What's happening?
In terms of hobbies, I've been described by my friends in the Greens as kind of a data nerd. I like to play around with spreadsheets and things like that in my spare time, which I know isn't necessarily the most interesting thing, but it's, you know, it's what I tend to do if I've got like a whole bunch of time free. I also like writing music. It's good to like, you know, get out certain emotions if you need that. It's quite therapeutic. I also write a little bit in my spare time, in a mixture, usually alternating between writing a short story in English and writing a short story in Esperanto.
Can people find your work anywhere?
No, this is all just stuff I keep in a folder. I'm way, way too self-conscious about that kind of stuff to put it anywhere public.
You are listening to Sustainable Sounds.
So, building a community. How do you like to start this? What community would you like to start with first?
I mean, one of my big priorities at the moment is, again, establishing a queer community in Aberdeen in particular, but in encouraging people to engage with the queer community in their own cities as if they're, you know, queer people themselves. Because, again, a lot of queer people can feel isolated, you know, in smaller spaces where they can feel like they're among the only queer people. Like when I first came out as transgender, I didn't know another queer person for 6 months after I came out. It wasn't until then that I met the first other trans person I'd ever known. And it wasn't for quite a while after that before I started meeting other queer people in force, only after I moved to Glasgow that I really started meeting a significant body of queer people that I could consider myself part of as a community.
I was listening to another podcast, the name of which escapes me, but a trans woman was being interviewed, quite a famous one, again, the name escapes me. One thing that did actually stick with me was, as she was growing up, I think she'd gone to university or something like this, before she transitioned, and meeting gay people, meeting other members of the LGBTQIA community, and talking to them and going, oh, actually, some of this makes sense to me, this feels right and correct and better than what I was feeling growing up. I think I'm gay, and came out to her mum. Then she started meeting trans people and suddenly goes, oh, hold on a minute, that makes more sense. Mum, yeah. Looking up to you a couple of years ago, well, guess what? Is this the importance? Is that the importance of a community?
Yeah, within the trans community, we have a special term for someone like suddenly realising that they're trans. We call it their egg cracking. Like they were an egg up until that point. The egg cracking. Uh-huh. Like they were an egg up until that point, and then suddenly the egg cracks, and they're, you know, now their true selves, in a sense. It's quite a nice analogy we use. It's kind of the trans equivalent of coming out. But yeah, it certainly is very important to have those kinds of communities, especially to realise who you are. Because I only realised I was trans after a friend of mine explained it to me. As of this month, it's officially been 6 years since one of my friends sat me down and explained to me what the concept of being trans was, and I pretty much came out to them on the spot, because again, I was like, yeah, that sounds exactly like my experience, that sounds exactly like how I feel, I'll go down this path, and I haven't really doubted myself since then.
Does that qualify for a round of applause? I think I might find some sound effects from somewhere. I mean, 14. I suppose I knew I was straight at 14, but
I've known a lot of people who thought they were straight at 14. I've known a lot of people who thought they were cis at 14 as well. It's just because it's the norm society tends to push on people. A lot of people tend to assume that they're in the majority group, even if it turns out later that they're not. It's the problem with the kind of normativity we teach to people. We teach people in like primary school about romantic relationships between men and women, but we don't really teach people about queer relationships until they get into high school. So people grew up assuming that one is them and one is this weird other that they learn about later.
Right, so talking about building a community here, so how do you bring people together?
I mean, if you want like my secret for building a social group, it would be just like get to know people and then randomly invite people to things. That is like the true thing, is you want to organize social things because that's the best way to build these connections. And then just randomly invite people to things. And then once you have like a decent number of people you can randomly invite to things, you have like this community in your back pocket, basically, and everyone in the same space has that same community that they can just summon to help them with things occasionally as well. And also like some people to lean on in, you know, hardship times, things like that. As well as people who have gone through these same experiences and feel the same way emotionally as you do in certain spaces.
What have been the achievements to this? The achievements with this and the challenges to it as well?
So I will say the achievement is that I now know like an awful lot of queer people within Aberdeen. One thing I've heard from queer people I know who've been in Aberdeen for a while, like in the course of decades, are saying that the queer community in Aberdeen actually used to be a lot bigger. Aberdeen used to have like 4 or 5 gay bars that, you know, people could go to that served varying different subsets of the community. And then these days Aberdeen has precisely 1 gay bar and 1 actually really good charity, but a lack of queer spaces. So it's making it harder for, you know, these kinds of smaller groups of LGBT people to network with each other. And one of the things I'm trying my best to do is just link up people from within these disparate groups to try and, you know, produce a city-wide almost feel of queer community. Because when I went to Grampian Pride, I was very impressed by, like, I was surprised by the fact that there were so many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people there, when, you know, attendance at queer things I've seen and been to have been relatively low, because it tends to be these smaller groups that tend to operate fairly independently of each other.
Mentioned safe spaces here. What is the importance of a safe space?
It's a good idea to have a place where you and other people who've had the same experiences as you are able to share these common experiences. It can help for both bonding and for, you know, moving on from these issues and actually learning to accept yourself. Being in a room where whatever you are is considered normal is an incredibly important thing. It's the kind of thing that gets overlooked by, you know, people who don't often need use of these spaces.
Now this, the desire to feel normal, as you said, or just let your guard down, I suppose, I think is what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
The relevance of this, or the practicalities of this, isn't a lack of integration. It's not taking yourself away, is it? It's something to be done in conjunction with fitting in with the rest of society.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not that we're going to, you know, get on a boat and all go and, you know, take over an island and run it as like the queer safe space for just us. You know, we're not going to get, I mean, we'd have to call it the gay flower, but that was a good joke. I'm proud of that one. But, you know, these safe spaces are just so that we are able to function in society on the level of other people, you know, but it's also nice to have these spaces on the side of that as well.
Hey there, this is Colin McEwen, and you are listening to the Sustainable Sounds podcast.
Welcome back to the musical section of Sustainable Sounds. you are joining us with our guest musician, Colin McEwen. Hey, Colin.
Hi there. Thanks for having me back.
Colin, can you tell us a bit about how you got involved with the Scottish Greens again?
Yep, I will do indeed. I've been feeling for a while of that horrible feeling of sitting on a fence and thinking, I got to get off this fence. There's so much going on. How do I engage in the world? And the impetus to get involved came from a conversation with a guy who I'd met who had been a Tory councillor. And he asked me if I thought about being a councillor, which I hadn't. And I've still thought about it. I'm not sure that that's really the best contribution for me to make, actually, in that form. But I thought, well, I want to do something. I want to get involved in something. And so I duly went online, joined, and started getting involved in online meetings and just listening to things and building a sense of who is there, what is there, what are the concerns that people have. Anyway, that's how I came to be involved. And through that, I had the great good fortune very quickly to be able to make a contribution musically, which I have to say I am delighted to do because it works. It's what I like to contribute to the world.
And you are contributing a song for this episode.
Yes, indeed.
What is the song?
Song today is, it's called Gone Fishing. And this, I wrote this again. This is painting a picture. So 1998. Good God, what a long time ago. Anyway, I've been involved in community arts projects and I've also been driving buses, and the two came together. I was sitting in a stagecoach bus in Buchanan bus station driving the X-19s, which is a whole story there if you want about cartels and the bus industry. First bus wanted to buy Strathclyde buses. That would have meant the Monopolies Commission said that one company can't own the two. All of a sudden, Stagecoach moved into Glasgow. Oh my goodness me, competition, literally. People fisticuffs at bus terminuses. I kid you not, bus wars. Anyway, I'm not going any further with that because it'll get libelous. But one day I thought, I bought a newspaper. I think I bought the Scotsman, which I didn't usually buy, and on a Friday. And I looked at the job adverts, and there was this job advert. It said, book bus driver, Matt. I read it. I thought, goodness me, that's my job. And then I got home that night, and somebody phoned me up and said, Colin, I've just seen your job advertised in the Scotsman. To which I said, I've just seen it too. So I applied and exhausted the people who were interviewing me because I was so excited about it. And I got this job. It was driving a mobile library all around Scotland, visiting schools, driving around a children's writer or illustrator, taking the latest and best in children's books to areas remote from bookshops and libraries. And I saw all of Scotland in a year and a half. I saw places I'd never been before and couldn't imagine ever going to. And everywhere we went, people were welcoming and excited. And the people in the B&B would go, oh, you're here for this school tomorrow, because they'd heard about us coming. Everywhere we went, there was someone who took pictures of us for local press, because what happened was they went into the school, they took pictures of the school because we were there. And then the local paper sold about 10 times as many because everybody wanted to buy them and send them to aunties and uncles in Canada and Australia. So it was just an amazing experience. But one of the places we went in was Orkney. And we were standing in the Kirkwall Harbour, standing there watching, just went down to the harbour to, as you do. And there, the quayside was this wee boy that had been in the school that we'd been in. He was saying goodbye to his dad. His dad was going off in a trawler. And the mum was asking him how long they'd be. And the dad told them how long they'd be and where they were going. And that then actually became the second verse of the song. I just watched this boat just disappearing. And it was one of those moments where you suddenly realize, oh, that's a reality. That's a lived reality that I benefit from in terms of the kids' fish fingers, but I don't know that lived reality. And suddenly there's that very direct connection with something. Okay. And then after that, we were staying in a B&B in Lerwick. And we had, where do we go? Lerwick. That's right. We went to Shetland. That's right. I was just remembering something that happened. It was the World Cup, Scotland in the World Cup, 98. And they shut down Shetland, literally. We went to a wee island. And at lunchtime, the headmaster said, now the wind's getting up and you've got to get back. So we got the back. And of course, that was the day that Scotland, the afternoon, Scotland were playing in the World Cup. And apparently news had gone round that Shetland was just to go on, as long as there was basic services in place, everybody could go home and watch the World Cup. we got sent away from the school. Anyway, for the B&B we were staying in, we woke up on the first morning and the husband wasn't there. They were listening to the radio and he'd gone off in a lifeboat to go and pick somebody up from the middle of the North Sea who was, apparently there were some school kids rowing from Norway. Or they were sailing from Norway and the engine had got into trouble, so they'd gone off. Anyway, it was another of those, goodness me, I hear about this. You know, you hear about fishing boats going down, you hear about lifeboats being launched as a city boy, but I never have that direct connection. It's very, of course, that's the lives that people live that I don't know of. So I put them together and then it's about just my sort of painting a picture of these hidden lives. And then there's mention in the Song of the Seal in every harbour. There's always all around Scotland, everywhere we went, this little head would pop up and have a little look at us and disappear again. The fact that it can appear and look so enticing with those big eyes like a dog and then disappear, it hints at so much we don't know, doesn't it? I mean, where do they go? What do they do? They're popping up, having a wee look, and then another one pops up and they pop down, another one comes and says, what happens under there? So in many ways, you know, as I've been thinking about this song and how to introduce it, it's just, for me, it's just about worlds that I didn't know until I met them. And when I met them, they are so full. There's so much that we do not know that we don't encounter. And I could go on at length. And I love this song really because there are people who've been involved over the years and I've been playing this song who've contributed little bits to it that are in this recording.
If people wanted to get in contact with you, respective fans, how can they get in contact with you?
Me? Yep, sure. We've got a Facebook page, which is Luthrie Lockdown is the Facebook. Luthrie. You will be sick of hearing this if you listen to this often enough. That means you know it. Luthrie Lockdown, so called because Vaughan and I, Vaughan playing accordion, we worked on all this during the lockdown. And I just picked it as a name. I picked it because actually I found there was a web domain which I've got as well, which is www.luthrielockdown.tv, where there's video of Yvonne and me in the garden and in the garage, actually. There's one of us in the garage in full safety kit. So very happy to hear from people.
And the name of the song we are about to listen to?
It's Gone Fishing.
Tide is high, wind is low, sun's going down, red sky, golden glow. Loaded up now, crew's on board, casting off, and it's time to be gone. Gone fishing. Said they'd try round the Faroes and the Western Isles. Said if things go okay then they'd be home in a little while. Boy on the quayside waves goodbye, and in the waters of the harbor a seal swims by. Gone fishing. Gone fishing. Thank you. when a call goes out and flares go up into a storm sky. Boy wakes up to the telephone ringing and he hears his mother cry. And she says, time to be a man now, 'cause your daddy's gone. He's gone fishing. He's gone fishing. Tide is high, wind is low, sun's going down, red sky and golden glow. Boy on the quayside says his goodbyes, and in the waters of the harbor, a seal swims by. Gone fishing. Gone fishing. Gone fishing.
You are listening to Sustainable Sounds.
So, how did you get involved with the Green Party? Why did you get involved with the Green Party, I suppose, is a more interesting question.
Well, so for the longest time, I tended to consider myself fairly, well, not non-partisan. I tended to take a fairly broad view on parties in general, as someone who'd had an interest in politics for a long time. It was really in response to a lot of the issues people were having with trans people. Like, a lot of other political parties were at around the same time really attacking trans people. It only really seemed to be the Greens that were, you know, standing up for trans people very publicly and were actually internally dealing with any issues of transphobia, where you see parties like Labour had that national conference with a whole bunch of TERFs at it. A lot of SNP's backbench tend to be quite transphobic. You see, you know, parties like ALBA that seem to have a significant number of transphobes involved. The Tories are just not especially trans-friendly in general. But the Greens seem to be actually quite decent at rooting out transphobia on really any level. So they were a particularly trustworthy party. So I took an interest in the Greens, and then over time this grew into more and more of an I should probably join thing, because, you know, I was occasionally getting involved in things less formally as a non-member. And then later on, I just joined up. I think the specific reason I joined was it was in advance of the Scottish parliamentary election. And I was interested in helping campaigning, although I wasn't really able to because of a whole bunch of COVID stuff that went down at around the same time. But that was, you know, my main interest in wanting to join up, but also for that social connection, that kind of community of other Green people, and a group of other people who seem to think similarly to how I think and have similar enough politics to me that it's quite nice to be around those people. Although, again, because of COVID times, we couldn't really do that many social events.
I was about to ask whether you got involved in the most recent election or the one previous to that, and then I suddenly realised you probably weren't able to vote in the one previous to this.
So in terms of local elections, the last local election would have been 2017. I think I was by about a month too young to vote in that. And then we had the 2016 Scottish parliamentary election. I was definitely too young to vote in. And then 2017 local election, I was too young by about a month. And then we had 2019's UK general election, I did vote in. I don't actually remember who I voted for in that. And then, obviously, we had the 2021 Scottish parliamentary election where I voted Green and failed utterly to help campaign for the Greens. And then, obviously, coming into this election, I'm now helping fairly directly to try and get Greens in council.
You can join the Scottish Greens at greens.scot/join.
So, moving on to the next section, how to get involved. How can people get involved in the queer community where you are? And how can people get involved in green politics where you are?
So in Aberdeen, if you want to get involved in queer communities in Aberdeen, it's a good idea to go to four pillars. They are, first of all, they're the people who arrange our Pride Parade. The Grampian Pride is arranged by four pillars, but they also have spaces you can go to where you can have one-on-one discussions with people. And it's also a good space to just meet other queer people. If you're a gay bar kind of person, we have the one gay bar in Aberdeen, Cheers, if you want to head down there. Alternatively, if you're a university student, both Aberdeen University and Robert Gordon University have LGBT forums. They do both individual socials and joint socials. There was a joint social earlier this week where the two universities faced each other off in a pub quiz, and we won. So, you know, big up Aberdeen Uni wins. And yeah, so I'd say we don't really have that kind of made a unified queer community quite yet, but you know, obviously more people wanting to be directly involved would bring us closer to that goal, you know, of having something set up. More queer stuff is always better, as I say.
And with the green political sphere as well, locally to you?
Yeah, if you wish to get involved in Aberdeen green politics, I would say, well, first of all, probably joining the party would be a good idea. You can do some aspects of pro-green campaigning without being a party member. But it's, you know, joining the party lets you come to things like meetings. We very occasionally have socials. I mean, we are starting to move back onto in-person stuff now. Leafleting's like coming out leafleting as well. Aberdeen Greens post on their Twitter every time that there's a leafleting drive. I tend to lead a lot of the ones in Torrey Ferry Hill myself. So if you want to get involved in, you know, campaigning in this election specifically, leafleting's a good place to start. It's also a good place to get to know people. So you have this green community as well, socially. Yeah, canvassing will probably happen at some point as well, and then we'll be doing more direct things.
You can follow Aberdeen and Aberdeenshire Greens on Twitter under the handle of at Aberdeen Greens.
Yes.
Also, you can follow a very interesting person called at Esme_Houston_ on Twitter. Loads of really good stuff there as well.
I've heard she's decent.
Oh, yeah, brilliant, brilliant. Esperantist, Greenheart, Scottish Greens member. What does the watermelon emoji stand for?
Green on the outside, red on the inside. As in eco-social.
What? Again, I'm a bit older than you. I'm not fluent in emoji yet. I've just learned what the aubergine stands for. Right, let me just check. We've spoken about how people can get involved. Is there a way to become a member? Activities, sort of crossover there, haven't we? Events, regular activities. Have I missed anything?
Online campaigning is also very helpful. Just, you know, coming onto our Twitters, retweeting things, sharing things around, posting on the internet in favour of green politics, posting on the internet in favour of the campaigns we're running in places like St. Patrick's Park is very helpful. You know, just kind of spreading the message in general is a very useful way to help that doesn't involve a whole bunch of commitment if you're, you know, not especially keen on actually coming out in the rain. And Aberdeen's fantastic weather.
I'm heavily involved in the sport of field hockey. The hockey club in Aberdeen is in fact called Granite City, which I think is a nice metaphor.
Yeah.
I'm going to get in trouble for that. I have family from Aberdeenshire. It's a holiday up there. It is lovely. Balance is lovely this time of year, especially in the summer. Aberdeen Greens, five Greens do love you. I'm sorry for that. But we have a much nicer coast down than five.
You want to get involved in green politics? Follow the Scottish Greens on social media.
As we begin to wind up, I'm going to get in trouble. As we begin to wind up, why should people in Aberdeen vote for Esme Houston in the upcoming council elections? Hashtag vote green.
Hashtag vote green. Because it's a good idea to have these kinds of younger green voices in a council that's full of basically just old white men at this point. We need to get these diverse voices elected. And also, I think, you know, myself and our party, we stand for good things. It's, you know, these are important things and voices that need heard on an official level. We can do an awful lot outside of council, but there's a lot we can't do without councillors. Not to mention, you know, we tend to actually listen to people, which is something a lot of councillors struggle with. A lot of councillors barely even show up to council meetings these days. Aberdeen City Council isn't exactly running things well at the moment. They've scrapped plans to pedestrianise Union Street. They're not very good at things like picking up bins, you know. There's, you know, a lot of issues like that. They're planning to park tarmac over St. Vitus Park. They're building a second harbour. Things like that that, you know, really annoy local residents, but they, you know, most of their councillors either don't care or have some interest in maintaining the status quo. The Greens are very interested in breaching the status quo and actually moving things in a radical new direction, making things materially better for people rather than just, you know, making empty promises and sitting back for 5 years.
I think you touched on some stuff there, which is really, really, really important. The grassroots stuff, if you want change to happen, local level, grassroots level, this is where it happens.
Yeah, this is why I think local elections are the most important, because the majority of everybody's daily interactions with the government and the state in general is going to be either with or through the council. Like, the Scottish government, you know, made buses for you if you're under 22s, but even your Young Scot cars are delivered by the council. Your bins are taken out by the council. You know, your taxis are usually managed at least through the council. Your potholes and the roads are filled in by the council. An awful lot of local transportation decisions can be made by the council. The council does a lot more than a lot of people think they do. For a lot of people, the council is this faceless organisation that just occasionally does stuff and they feel like they get no say in it. And it's important to have people in that will be able to ensure that ordinary people actually do get a say in the strictures that govern them, so to speak, on a daily basis.
I was looking through the last council elections results and the turnout, I think the higher turnouts are about 60%. Most of them tend to be around 50 or 40, I mean, 55, 48%. Get out and vote. We are a democracy.
Yeah, yeah. One thing I will say is if there's one takeaway from this episode of the podcast that would be very, very important for people to take away, is that regardless of even who you're voting for, voting in general is an exercise of your civil duty as well as your civil right to be an enfranchised member of society and to have this democratic hand in these governing bodies. It's incredibly important that you are exercising this right, because otherwise the people in charge won't care. If like only 10 people are voting and the 10 people who vote are the people in charge's friends, then they don't have to care about appealing to regular people if regular people don't bother coming out and vote. So it's, yeah, number one thing is vote, for God's sake. Actually vote, and then your voices will be heard. You can shelter people way more effectively with a ballot than you ever could on the streets.
You know what? I was going to say something else, but you use a better word than me. Enfranchise. Enfranchise the people.
So, yeah.
I think that's a nice thing for this podcast, isn't it? For this episode. What are your hopes and plans for the future?
So we're hoping to bring Aberdeen City into the 21st century, for one thing. The city seems stuck in this kind of 70s, 80s-esque, you know, manner of thinking. So if we get elected and we're able to spend the next 5 years improving things like the city centre and the situation in Torrey Ferry Hill as well, that would be absolutely delightful. You know, keeping on involvement with the Greens, trying our best to actually make a positive difference. I think that's something that a lot of people can relate to. A lot of people want to come out into activism wanting to at least make some kind of positive change. It's important to me and it's important to a lot of the other Green people I know that these changes actually happen.
Esme Houston of the Aberdeen Greens, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
This has been a Half Court Press production by Teo McLeod for the Scottish Green Party.
Music was provided by Colin McEwan.